We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome to the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast.
Welcome to the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast. This is me, Lean, from arsenalvision.co.uk. Shortly, James, Elliot and Paul will be discussing the routine victory against that German side. Who were they called? Bayern Munich, that was it, on Tuesday night. Unfortunately, I only watched the first half at the time due to work. How life can allow work to get in the way of such important events, I don't know. But I finally managed to catch up. It was simply a sensational team performance. You can go from Peter Cech and goal. That is why you paid £10.9 million for a 33-year-old. Sensational. Kept us in the game at 0-0. Made some wonderful saves. Both in the first and second half. Our defence, I mean, come on, they were playing against arguably the most informed striker in the world at the moment. He's been scoring goals for fun everywhere he's been. Not at the Emirates, though, because he's playing against Laurent Koscielny and Per Mertesacker, who are wonderful centre-back, and they showed it. Our midfield, Francis Coquelin, Santi Cazorla, Mesut Ozil, used the ball really well on the break. And our attackers caused some massive problems on the break in that first, especially in that first half. There was a period from about 20 minutes to half-time, where if we won the ball back from them, we would zoom up the pitch and we caused them massive problems and we had good chances to score. It wasn't Theo's best game in front of goal, but his pace and his movement, his work rate was really, really good. And it was just a great performance. It was really important that we kept Bayern out, because if they scored first, the way they passed the ball, it would have been really difficult to get back into the game. But we kept it a clean sheet, brought on Giroud, bang, 1-0 from a set piece. Bit scruffy, but who cares? As long as it goes in, and it went in. And then we kept them out again. They couldn't get through us, and we broke on them again. Hector Bellerin, wow. He's just a sensational player. He's just, I can't remember at Arsenal, or anywhere for that matter, a more exciting right back, I should say, than Hector Bellerin. He had a bit of a tough time against Douglas Costa. He's not the first player to have trouble dealing with Costa. He's been wonderful this season for Bayern Munich. But he grew into the game. When it mattered at the end, made an interception from so far away, burned past his man and set up Ozil for the second goal. It was a great night, a wonderful game, because we've got some important games coming up. Everton coming up on the weekend, and we've got a chance in the Champions League again now. It's going to be tough still. There's still a lot of work to do, but there's no better way to get back into it than a good victory against one of the best teams in the world. So I'm happy. I'm very happy. I could ramble all day about this. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to hand you over to the guys. And I'll be back after the Everton game. And enjoy the podcast. I know I will. See you then.
Sarcastic introduction takes leave of absence as Arsenal beat Bayern Munich at home, causing me to actually want to celebrate the victory as opposed to saying something obnoxious. This is the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast. My name is Elliot Smith, and you can block me on Twitter at Yankee Gunner. It really is an occasion that needs no sardonic tone or cynical introduction, although I assure you we will interject some cynicism later in the pod. But it was a famous night at the Emirates, one that we haven't seen the likes of since arguably the victory over Barcelona. You may remember that game as Arshavin, that one. Yeah, it was fantastic. And there's a lot to get to. So as usual, Paul and James are both here, and we thank them for that. First, James, you can find him on Twitter at GoonerFanatic49. Hello, James.
Good evening.
Good evening indeed. And Paul, you can find him on Twitter at PausingInMyPants. As always, Paul, hello.
Woohoo!
Woohoo indeed. Yeah, and there was much rejoicing. This was the kind of performance we really had been waiting for against a big side. And this season, we're already seeing some. We beat Chelsea in the Community Shield. Some could say that was a big victory. We beat United at home. Now we've beaten Bayern at home. We did beat Spurs away, by the way. I know it was the Milk Cup, the Capital One Cup, but still counts. But this was a really special occasion, and it came at a time when we absolutely needed it to. So I want to just quickly get to this first. James, who was your man of the match?
Oh, straight off. Well, it's a funny game to pick him out of the match, given the type of performance was so team-oriented and defensive from large parts of it. But the one player that really stood out for me, I think he's been superb this season and was exquisite on the night, was Nacho Monreal. His positioning throughout his, I mean, coming up against Thomas Muller, I mean, a player that we know from his World Cup performances, I mean, you know, he's a player that's excelled over the last couple of years, and he had him in his pocket all game. And you know, we talked a little bit about it on the last pod, Paul especially, about how important he's been just from sort of distributing play, moving forward, and just how solid he's been throughout the season. I thought that was exemplary in this game too. There was that little moment, and if I dare say, it was almost Ozil-esque. I think it was around the 60th minute mark, when he played that phenomenal flick touch. It was just exemplary of the kind of skill he possesses outside of just his defensive solidarity. But like I said, I mean, it was such a team dynamic performance that it wasn't really a game full of sort of individual moments. But for me, I think it's also just sort of ties in as well with just how excellent he's been throughout the course of the season too.
Absolutely. He's been fantastic for us, and he's a player that I think people were unsure about, and now he's arguably playing the best left back in England. Paul, what about you? Who did you have as the man? I know it was a fantastic team performance, but pick one.
All right, I've got like four in mind, including Monreal, so that one's taken.
Don't I'll do pick, your laundry list and
I'm
then
not,
pick one.
I'm
going to do that hey, after you.
Yeah, I don't do laundry lists. That's James. I'm telling you, I have a laundry list.
I don't even do laundry,
different.
So we all got something in common.
That's why we do Skype. So I'm going to go for Bellerin, because I think in a year or two's time, we will remember this game as the Bellerin game or as the Monreal and Bellerin game. I just thought it's kind of reverse history, because his best moment was at the end of the game. And he got well roasted by Costa in the first half, but to be honest, anybody would. Costa had 10 take-ons. I mean, that's just incredible as a stat, if anybody ever looks at this shit. 10, of which 9 were successful. And I actually thought Bellerin still had a good first game, or good first half. His second half was exemplary in that signature moment at the end, when we were already a goal up. But I think what that did to the team, the morale, and making the old man happy on the sideline, just superb. So, I think he matches nicely with Monreal as kind of that pair. And given how Bayern wanted to hurt us when we were so solid through the middle, it all came down to the wings in a way. So I think Bellerin and Monreal are a fitting pair. I'm looking forward to hearing yours, Elliot. But I bet I know who it is. I bet it's Cech.
I bet you don't, actually. It's funny, right? So Cech is the obvious one for me, and I have a whole segment of this pod that I want to devote to Cech. But I'm going to go with someone who wouldn't be on the list, I think, of the obvious choices. I think you hit two of the most important ones, obviously, and check who we'll get to. I'm going to pick Parameta Sacker. And the reason is simply that he's a guy that a lot of people want him to be out of the starting 11. They want Gabriel to replace him. His time has come. He's come in for criticism, and some of it is deserved. But last night, and we're recording the day after the match, I felt that he showed real leadership, real composure. His positioning was always spot on. There was a ball played to the near post, I think, that Lewandowski was running onto, where he got a crucial foot in. They got him behind the back four occasionally, but it was more on Koscielny's side, the Mertesackers. And for a guy who's really been questioned as, is he still a first-choice center back, I thought he did everything he needed to in a game where concentration was paramount, and he really showed what makes him a special player. Positioning, leadership, concentration, professionalism, he had it all. And while there were arguably better performances on the night, I don't know that there was a better performance from a player who needed a good performance to show that he's still got it, and he did.
Elliot, can I add briefly on that? Because I think it's a great pick. Because there is no way Bayern didn't go into that game without targeting Mertesacker. They must have been laughing about Lewandowski going after Mertesacker. Mm-hmm. And yet it was basically never a factor. And I think it's a tribute to Mertesacker, but also Koscielny, Mertesacker, and the guys in front of them. But the fact that he was never, ever exposed tells you how well he played, how cleverly he played. Because he wasn't really flashy, and yet they never got at him.
You saw what it meant to him, too, when Ozil scored the goal that you knew was going to give us the victory. I think for the two German players in particular, it was a really meaningful game, and they really wanted to show what they had. Because they knew back home in Germany this was a game that was going to be watched, and they had a lot to prove, and I thought they both showed up. All right, let's get to Petr Cech.
On that point, when you think of Ozil and what he went through the last time he played Bayern and at the Emirates, and the humiliation and missing the penalty and how he got roasted in the German press. Now he never shows up for the big games. This was a freaking huge game for him, Mertesacker, and this whole team.
So let's talk Cech for a minute, and then we're going to get to Paul's fetish in a second. Don't worry. That's Theo Walcott, if you were worried. It's not the ball gag, although that may be too. James... Cech, obviously, it's so hard because it'd be so easy to go down the path of discussing this in the context of not using Cech in the other two Champions League games, obviously. But I think we saw just why we went out and got him. And I guess I'll put it to you like this. After seeing him now help us win crucial saves to help us win against Manchester United, crucial performance to help us beat Bayern Munich, is he the most impactful signing we've made among the three big ones, Ozil, Sanchez, and Cech? Has Cech been what was really missing, leadership at the back to give you that platform? Because we've always been able to play going forward, but do you see Cech being that crucial glue at the back that's been missing in years past in the big games?
I think that's a very difficult question to answer, given that each of those three players came in under such different circumstances and added something very distinct to the side. I totally agree with the fact that he's been absolutely massive for the side, and he seemed to be the most important piece to the puzzle. You know, if we can assume that Giroud and Walcott are actually turning out slightly better as a duo than perhaps some of us had expected going into this season, but that's still to be determined. In the context of it all, I think Ozil still, for me, has to be the most impactful and biggest signing for the club, just because of what that meant as a watershed moment for Arsenal Football Club, when you look back at it, and for Alexis Sanchez to follow and for Cech to come in. But to bring in Cech from a Mourinho's Chelsea, such a hated rival of Arsenal Football Club as an entity, and such a calm, imposing figure, and in a position that we've really, really struggled with. And even when we look back to Jens Lehmann, it's hard to imagine, given his type of character, to come into a fairly shaky Arsenal side and to really, you needed that calm and that leadership. Jens had all of that around him, whereas Cech to a certain degree, he's really had to come in and impose himself on that dressing room. He's brought a calm and assuredness about this side, and that's really seeped into the defence and the rest of the team. When you look at most recent defensive performances, the three clean sheets against United, Watford, and now Bayern Munich. So I mean, he's a massive player, and I think also just that the added bonus of where he'd come from too. I mean, it's been a phenomenal signing for the club. There's no doubt about that. And it's just October, so
yeah,
hopefully there's...
I think my argument would simply be that we've always seen whoever plays for Arsenal Football Club up front gets chances and eventually will take chances. And while, you know, there's debates that will rage about the quality of the attacking players we've had and have and what we need, you know we're going to create chances and have some opportunities to score. But at the back, I don't think we've had that figure that calms the back four and who you feel can keep you in a game or win you a game when you really need to. You know,
and won't
I think,
get a red card.
Yeah, and won't get sent off in the big moment. Won't make the howler of a mistake that you just can't afford to have. And Cech, he gives everybody that sense of calm. I also think we can't undersell the distribution element of his game. When he kicks long, when he throws, you know, when he holds it a little longer to calm everyone down versus a Chesney, for example, who could make brilliant saves, but really put us under pressure a lot with his poor distribution. I would say that we had the better chances in the first half and throughout the game, the good chances, the really good chances fell to us. But Cech had to make some really crucial saves. For you, Paul, did Cech keep us in this match? Is Cech getting maybe more credit than he deserves? Were the saves maybe more routine? Or is this exactly why you go out and get an experienced keeper? Because he makes himself big, he doesn't put a foot wrong. One thing that I thought was interesting is there were a couple saves he made where he just made, you know, the cliche, he made himself big. But he is a big keeper as opposed to Ospina, who's just a much more diminutive keeper. Were these routine saves looking routine because of his size and his positioning?
Well, yeah, I think it does him a bit of a disservice. I did go through all the saves again, and most of them, the vast majority of them, he certainly should have made. But he made them safely, securely, you know, passed them into safe areas, kept us all under control, and then he had a couple of really big saves. Kept us in the game? Well, no more than Neuer kept them in the game. So,
oh, of course, absolutely. You know, I just meant it more from a standpoint of, you know, was it Cech's brilliance, or were these sort of more of the routine variety?
Yeah, and in a way, I'm more pointing that at some of the articles that were written and some of the comments at the time by people who I don't think really understood what went on in that game of, you know, Cech saves Arsenal, you know. Alan Brazil was going on about how, you know, every time he'd switch over, he'd see Bayern attacking us again. Well, you know, especially when you watch it a second time and you're no longer nervous, this, you could argue either way who was the more in control. Obviously, they were in control of possession. So, and I think that reflects very much on Cech and his game and his role in it. That calm that he provided, you know, for well into 90% of this game, our core defensive unit were largely in control of everything that went on around them. And so you can debate what control is, but I think Cech was huge. And one of the really interesting comparisons and battles was Cech versus Neuer, just as Bellerin versus Costa, Müller versus Monreal. Those were the really fascinating battles. And, you know, Cech held his own against Neuer. I mean, Neuer was brilliant, but
yes.
Once again...
Except for when he wasn't.
Yeah. And people say, oh, he never does that. Well, he's done it twice with us. Podolski dispatched one when we beat them 2-0. Just like that, over the head of Neuer, completely flummoxed it. So that's what you get with Neuer, brilliance and the occasional fuck-up.
And the occasional wreck.
Yeah.
Well, look, let's do this. Let's talk about the attacking half of the pitch where there was some good stuff that was done. And just to piss Paul off, I'll turn this over to you, James. Theo Walcott, incredible performance in threatening Bayern and making them worry with his pace and his movement and his strength and his positioning, or disappointing performance in that he didn't deliver the final ball when he had opportunities on multiple occasions. Did you love Theo's performance because it made them worry and created havoc, or were you frustrated by it because his final ball needed to be better? Where did you fall on that?
Oh, somewhere in between, probably.
All right, it's fair.
I thought Theo posed a very direct and exciting threat through most of the game. I mean, he was constantly on the shoulder. Guardiola had chosen Alaba as centre-back to try and deal with the problem, especially to be able to have that kind of recovery pace when we were on the counter. So he clearly looked at Theo and thought, well, like, you know, I've got to alter my natural setup here in order to sort of deal with the issue. And I don't think that in itself was able to resolve it for him. We saw several occasions where Theo, who's got, you know, we don't really often credit him for how good his feet can be in tight situations. There's still some sort of question mark for me as to his finishing selection. He sometimes wants to try and sort of inside of the foot it.
He loves to curl it to the far post when it's not on.
Right. And when he does, he sometimes, you know, it's sort of just a pass to the goalkeeper. If, you know, if he got a bit more whip on it, it might, you'd feel like it might more often cause somewhat, yeah, or pose somewhat more of a danger for
him. He's also not a put his foot through it kind of striker, but that's all right.
For the most part, although he did score that really incredible goal against West Brom, maybe in a less pressure cooker environment, but at the end of last season. So he can throttle that ball when he wants to. He just seems to, you know, in everything he does, including his beard now, he seems to want to try and emulate Thierry Henry. So,
what'd you make of the header? I mean, great save certainly, but maybe should be expected to head that down into the ground. That's a striker's position there.
Yeah, I think, here's the thing, I think against most, you know, 90% of goalkeepers, that's probably a goal. He's probably done enough. But given that position, you know, he's got no one around him, he's 6 yards right in the middle of the goal, you'd expect him to at least, you know, head it down, head it a little wider, make it absolutely impossible for Neuer to get there. It's a phenomenal save. But Theo can do a little better there. And, you know, for the other aspects of his game is on the counter, you know, everything seems to be coming through from Alexis to Theo, is pulling defenders wide. His final product wasn't always great, but and actually for the most part was slightly off for most of the match. But he was always seemed to be the danger man for us, and was creating the majority of our chances. So he was certainly a threat.
Yeah, I think, you know, the first thing you have to do to beat Bayern Munich is worry them. If you don't worry them and they get too comfortable and they settle into that passing game, and they did settle into it, they had over, you know, 72% possession or whatever it was. But they have to be a little worried. You have to give them that nervousness at the back. And I think we were in that game at halftime. You know, I think it's fair to say Bayern had more of the play, but we had more of the threat. And a lot of that was down to Theo. And that puts that doubt, that seed of doubt in their mind. And it starts there. It starts with a few chances. You know, the most disappointing thing about our game at home against Bayern the last time we played them was the missed penalty, right? Because after that, we never really looked like challenging them. But we had put that doubt into them in that first 10, 15 minutes of that match, too. In this match, we were able to build off that platform, whereas in that match, we sort of wilted. And a lot of that, I think, was down to our defensive performance in check. So, Paul, without dropping your pants down around your ankles, what did you make of Theo's overall play? And again, like James, do you fall on the side of the argument that he let himself and the team down with his final ball, or that his general threat was sort of the beginning of creating that, as I talked about, that seed of doubt for Bayern?
Yeah, his finishing was poor, for sure. It was a bit lame, to be honest, which was disappointing. I have a lot of sympathy for him on the header. I mean, even he was peeling away to celebrate it, and I think fairly so. He could have done better, but you got to choose between power placement and pointing it down, especially when you're not a natural. I mean, he's probably faced three headers in the six-yard box in his entire career as a striker. So that was probably his best finish, if you ask me. And if you look at Giroud's header, Theo probably did a lot better on his goal than his non-goal than Giroud did on his. But overall, I think the way I'd look at it is the Theo-Giroud tag team, the way we do it at the moment, works. We had the Theo thing works. we did have the more dangerous chances. They had more shots, but we had more shots in the box. We had more shots on target. There were less defenders on our shots because we were counterattacking. It just works. And it has, ever since he started at striker, whether he's had a great game or not, I think, you know, I think most people see it now. But I don't think we should get overly hung up in any one game about, because this is Theo, right? This isn't new to us. We always knew he can be very clinical and he can miss a bunch of easy chances. True of most strikers, certainly very true of Theo. And I think you, in on a day like that, you don't get too hung up on it because you throw the baby out with the bathwater. This worked for us overall, as much mm-hmm. because of the other players, but it sets up the platform for us to play the way we did.
I have to admit, intellectually, it seems backwards. To me, it seems like a Giroud should start, hold up play, let you build play, keep things safe by having defensive protection on set pieces and good set piece threat early in the game. And then after the teams have run around for a bit and they've been on the pitch for an hour and the mental focus maybe drops a little bit, you bring on the jet-heeled striker who's always trying to run in behind and take advantage of tired minds and tired legs. We do it the other way and it works. And the full credit to Giroud is, I've always said, I don't hate Giroud. I just don't think he's good enough to be the number one first choice for Arsenal. And as the backup or substitute striker, he's making a real contribution and looking like a guy who's okay with that role for right now. All the pressure in the world isn't on his shoulders. And maybe he's a guy who's better when he doesn't have the expectation of leading the line for Arsenal Football Club every game in, game out. Whereas Theo Walcott, I'm not saying he's been a world beater, is the type of guy who just seems to believe in himself enough that he has no problem with those expectations or that pressure. Another guy who obviously has no problem with expectation or pressure is Alexis Sanchez. But, James, this was sort of an uneven performance for him. And I think where he really struggled, obviously, was when he picked the ball up in his own half. Is this just a case of you're always going to get turnovers with Alexis, and he's not a guy you want collecting the ball and picking it up deep against a press? Were you frustrated by him, or is this just a byproduct of his game generally?
Yeah, I mean, I think you put it pretty well. I think it comes as part and parcel of his game. He likes to always do that heavy sort of cut back as players are sort of chasing back to press him and sort of cut back towards our own goal, which most of the time sort of retains possession, gives him that little bit of space, and then he can play his cross-field pass, or he often looks to play the ball back in centrally. And every now and then, and there were two occasions in particular in this game that it nearly was our undoing. That being said, you don't want to take away that part of his game, because it's a component of his sort of confidence, his willingness to always take on players. So he's always he likes to come deep to take the ball and start off a lot of our attacks. And in fact, I thought one of the surprises for me was how regularly our counterattacks often stemmed from Alexi coming a little bit deeper to find that space and then charge on against their strikers and their defenders, and look for the Theo or the Ozil. I think that was very much the case for that sort of that first chance we created through Mesut. I think, you know, there are some games where he can be super efficient with that, perhaps in games where we dominate the possession and he's not in that situation quite as much as he was against Bayern. So statistically speaking, there were going to be a couple of occasions where it didn't go quite right. But I think if you harp too much on about that and try and remove that from him, perhaps that takes away some of his qualities going forward too. So
of course,
I think
in an ideal world, you wouldn't want him collecting the ball deep in your half, right? I mean, that's you want him helping and contributing defensively, but in an ideal world, you don't want him trying to dribble out of press 25 yards from your goal. I think also against the Guardiola press, just in general, because the way Guardiola does it is for the first 3 seconds that you lose possession, you run like mad to get it back. And so you know they're going to hunt in packs. You can't really dribble your way out of the Guardiola press. You make a quick cross-field pass or a quick pass to change the direction of play so that the charging players who are pressing you don't have time to reposition themselves. And too often, Ramsey was guilty of this too, we tried to dribble our way out of the press. It really makes you appreciate the magic that is Santi Cazorla, because he was the one guy that really was able to dribble his way out of trouble. And ultimately, other than getting caught in possession, they didn't really hurt us. And it looked like the one area where we could get into trouble was being caught in possession. So, Paul, I mean, I'll give you a quick second on Alexis. I mean, you think maybe he's also just still a little bit knackered. I mean, playing so much.
Yeah.
You know, so much of his game is based on the energy that he's able to contribute.
Yeah, I mean, Wenger said something about it, almost like it's not right. He listed off the games he's played recently. I don't know who he's complaining to, possibly Chile, as he listed those two games. But he says it's not right with the tone of it's not fair, and basically said he's knackered. So I'm kind of wondering how they get him rested. Do they have enough time? Does he call that a rest before the weekend? I mean, I think a lot of our guys, the level of focus that took to win that, I think, is going to take a lot out of us, maybe as much as physically. It was really interesting looking at the running stats in general. Ramsey at halftime had run 10% more than any other player on the field, not surprisingly.
Yeah, his hamstring went on strike as a result of it.
That's exactly it. So, you know, physically it took a lot out of us. What I thought we did really well, when you see a team doing the pressing we had to do, if you do that for 90 minutes, you can't do it for 90 minutes. They would have got us after about 70 minutes. But the thing was, I'm no expert on pressing, but it seemed like we pressed high up at times, then we dropped off, then we stayed contained, we conserved our energy, we kind of rode the wave, then we'd press a bit more. It seemed to me we got it right. It seemed to me we did it very intelligently. Again, I'm no expert on these things.
No, that was something I wanted to ask you about do you think it was by design that we had designed certain situations to press and certain situations to drop deep? Because it looked like we were constantly balancing between those two approaches. We didn't press them in midfield. We'd either press them when their back four players, their defensive players, had it in their half, or we'd drop deep into a shell.
Yeah, I mean, what was clear, both Wenger and Guardiola said, we came to attack, to be proactive, to go forward. Wenger then talked about how pressing high up was working, but when they kind of forced us into that middle space, in other words, when their pressing was maybe, or their game was a little stronger than us, we were getting caught out, so he dropped back. And from there, I just think we used intelligence, because you would see them looking to each other about when they were going to press going forward. So I think we kind of ebbed and flowed. There were times where it looked like we were maybe inviting too much pressure on. And one way or another, kind of those periods of 5 or 10 minutes would pass, and then we get in a couple of counterattacks towards the end of the first half, and kind of the energy levels switched and the pressing levels went up. You know, maybe sometimes you can't force it too much. You get too far ahead of what you're actually able to support within your team, because we had to keep our lines very close together as well. Coquelin, Cazorla, for a little while seemed to get a little separated from our back four and create some gaps. So they had to pull back a little bit. That pulls the front line back a little bit. Ozil was pressing, and then it seemed like they decided Ozil was a safer bet to have in the two banks of four, and Alexis went up and pushed with Walcott. So it seemed like it continually evolved for that first 70 minutes before Giroud came on. So not enough of an expert to say how much was organic and how much was planned. I think they went with the flow. They pushed forward as much as they could, which for a lot of it, pressing-wise, was not very much. When they could, they did.
Yeah, I think that's about right. And, James, the second half was really enjoyable, I thought. I don't feel we were under that much threat. We got the goals. We looked comfortable. In general, I really enjoyed the game. I mean, you never enjoy playing these Guardiola teams that much because they have so much possession. It's not a ton of fun to watch your team without possession, but I actually enjoyed watching us move and shift and stay focused and concentrate and pick our spots. Tactically, did you see anything unique to the way we approached this, or was this just a case of Bayern imposed themselves on the game like they do and we handled it well and picked our spots to counter?
Well, I mean, I really like the point Paul was making earlier about us being in control but without the ball. I think it hasn't been uncommon for us recently to see that form of tactic imposed. And I think
I'll just say this really quickly, James. There was an article, and I can't remember. I think it was Football 365, and it was kind of snide, so I know everyone would get upset hearing this. But I thought they made a kind of funny point where they said if anyone should be an expert at knowing how to deal with sterile domination, sitting deep, and playing on the counter, it's Arsenal because they've been a part of that game on the other side so often. I mean, was this really a little bit of role reversal to some extent?
Yeah, but I don't think it's all that new over the last year. I mean, I was going to say the watershed moment for most of like us looking at this side when, you know, Arsenal has been berated by for a long, long time about not adapting to tactics, always just focusing on our team's game, regardless or irrespective of the opposition, always looking to attack, always looking to dominate the ball. And I think that was thrown up in the air somewhat against Man City. And we've seen that even against, you know, when we beat Aston Villa 5-0 at the Emirates last season, we had less than 50% of the ball. We saw our willingness to cede possession recently against United at home. We saw even going to Watford at times how willing we were to not just have to dominate the possession, but to focus on the defensive solidity, focus on our structure. A player like Coquelin and the partnership between him and Cazorla, the way that's formulated, there's just a much more concerted confidence in the way in which we can sit a little deeper at times and really restrict the space of the opposition and then use the likes of your Alexi, the Theo growing into the role when Alex comes on, even Ramsey, etc., and really punish teams on the break. And it's not just a facet of constantly looking at creating chances purely on the turnover, because we've also got the ability with Santi Cazorla on the transition. I think as we're beginning to see even with Kokan's ability on the ball, Mesut, these are all, you know, we have a team now that's so much more capable of adapting to game types and game situations than we had seen in the past. And that's where you really see the quality in these players. That's when you really look to a side that has the ability to really progress, because once you build that solid foundation and once you have a team that can do both, they can look at a team and really take them on in the first half an hour, a weaker team, and just punish them and attack from the first minute, and then you can play bigger teams like a Bayern and be willing to sit off and then punish them on the break. That's when you that's when you can really start to grow in confidence in the side, and I think that's what we're starting to see. I think that's for me one of the first really positive signs. And yeah, I think as you guys were mentioning, that capability of, I don't know just how planned and how formulated this idea of pressing every now and then knowing when to concede a lot of space in Bayern's own half, but making it very congested at the back was. But there did seem to be some form of pattern that formulated over the course of the game. And perhaps some of that was, you know, keeping Bayern on their toes, not overexhausting ourselves by pressing from the first minute to the last. And then naturally sort of having to cede the various spaces that you, that especially against a side like Bayern, that you're likely to as you start to tire. So, yeah, I feel really, really positive about, there just seems to be a cognizance and a knowledge that's growing now. I mean, we've had a lot of stability in the starting 11 that we've been able to put out since the start of the season. And there seems to now be a genuine confidence in the way in which we want to approach games. Certainly when you look at these last three games, and hopefully that's a sign of things to come.
It was a performance that I thought showed some quality, but it showed maturity, focus, concentration, energy, defensive awareness, you know, all the things that you have to win big trophies that have been called into question. And it's another big game that we've won this season. And if there's anything that the team and the manager have been knocked for, and by me in particular, it's failing to deliver us these big, exciting moments. I said at the beginning of the podcast that this may have been the first of these kind of memories I can think of since Arshavin scored the winner against Barcelona. And it really was great to have a moment like this back again. And I think that Barcelona team was the best in the world at the time. And I think this Bayern Munich team is currently the best in the world at the time. Paul, the goals, I wouldn't necessarily call them classics. Well, I wouldn't necessarily call the first one a classic, but so happy for Giroud to see him be able to contribute in this role. For you, is Giroud scoring goals off the bench one of those things that is not just obviously important in the game, but important in our season because the form he was in was so low? How important do you think this is for him as a confidence player, for the team, for him to get what proves to be a winning goal in a big match?
Well, this is huge because he's got other goals off the bench, but if you go back and look at them, some of them are a bit kind of, not to put it down, but some of them were pretty soft goals. This wasn't a very good header, but he changed the game when he came on. First thing he did was he got us some relief. A long ball upfield to Giroud. He won it. He got fouled. We got some possession. We took some pressure off. We were about to take a short ball, apparently, and Harrison said, fuck that for a game of soldiers. We're here to win this. So he sends the boys up. He sends up Mertesacker. He sends up Per. They put the ball in. To Giroud's credit, he gets to it before his man does and bundles it in. We don't really care, but he did change the momentum of the game. It didn't, you know, to be unfair to Theo, maybe, it didn't feel like Theo was going to score this game. Maybe somebody else would because Theo was on the field, but didn't feel like he was going to this time around. And Giroud really changed it. So I think this is going to be freaking huge for him because, A, this was Bayern. B, he is a hero. I tell you one of the things I loved in this game, I mean, there was some talk about the crowd being quiet. I thought that was harsh because, you know, this isn't the yellow wall of BVB. This isn't how we do it. I thought there was tremendous support for anything our team did, a tackle, some hustle, anything, all through that game. To be fair, we didn't have the ball very much, so...
It's hard to be loud and singing and screaming when for 10 minutes in a row you may not even have the ball. So I totally agree with you. I think the support was there when something happened. Yeah,
and that goal, I mean, they went apeshit. The slide was superb, especially compared to Ozil's rather sick, lame, I don't like to try too hard slide. The crowd went berserk, and the ovation Giroud got, I mean, whatever about what we're talking about, he could live off that ovation. The way his name was sung by the crowd was just supreme. I mean, it was just a glorious moment, and then Bayern looked deflated at that point. I look forward to our discussion on the second goal because that's a peach from so many angles as well, including the aftermath. I mean, it's just great.
Everything about that was great. I look at it this way. If we're going to win anything this season, we're going to need contribution from Olivier Giroud. And while he's not my cup of tea as a first choice, he is an important player for this club and he has to score goals. And after the red card against Zagreb and the loss out there and the way he looked and the form he was in, I really felt like his Arsenal career was kind of on a hiding to nothing, was kind of drifting away. And now he's kicked on, he's contributed goals off the bench, and now he gets the go-ahead goal in a very important game against the best club in the world. And no, it wasn't a vintage goal anyone will, you know, put in a museum. But if this can get him right back into contention as a starting option, great. But even if all it does is means that he comes on and feels he can change every game he's a part of, that's going to be so important for us. And I think it just is a good omen to see Giroud playing with a little more confidence. I do think he tends to be a bit of a confidence player, and he was so low after Zagreb and in around that time frame that this could really be what he needs to kick on. And we know when he gets in a purple patch, he can score goals in bunches as well as anybody in the entire league. I think... We got to get to the Ramsey injury. We will get to that. So, James, I know you want to discuss that. If we can just hold off on that for 1 second, I just want to talk about the second goal. For you, more happy player on that goal, Bellerin for his incredible contribution, Ozil for scoring it, or Oxlade-Chamberlain for being let off the hook for missing?
I don't think Alex came anywhere near... he didn't even look like he joined in the celebrations. He was silly gassed with himself having missed it, given it. He thought the ball was still in play, as we all did. In that sense, the goal was almost somewhat anticlimactic. The commentators, I myself, had no bloody hell, had no idea what the hell was going on for a good couple of minutes.
By the way, that's kind of me all day, every day. So now you know what it's like to just be me walking around the earth.
It was kind of delicious, though. I'll give it back to you, James. But I got to say, it was kind of delicious how kind of, it wasn't quite anticlimactic. It was just kind of confusion reigned as it suddenly dawned on more and more people, players, you know, what had gone on. The big grin on Alex's face, you still can't work out at what point he finally realized we'd scored. The pile over by the sideline, I thought they were celebrating the game was over, and then you realize it's a goal. Right. I mean, there were just so many. It was a beautiful unraveling of a moment.
What made it special, if you're watching on TV, is that the ball goes out of play. They zoom in on Oxlade-Chamberlain. The commentators are discussing it as a huge missed opportunity. And you hear a roar from the crowd who is watching Ozil celebrate. So watching it on TV, you don't know what's being celebrated. You don't know if it's a fight. You don't know what's going on. And then they zoom out and you see that Ozil has done that pathetic knee slide and figured it out from there. Go ahead, James.
Yeah, no, I mean, it added a fantastic emotion to it. It was just the initial sort of the initial 10, 15 seconds of, you know, Ozil actually scoring and then, like, genuinely thinking Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain had missed what was an absolute sitter to tie up the game. That, you know, there was this sort of heart-wrenching moment for a little while, and then that was added to the euphoria, sort of going from what felt like an idea to the sort of zenith sensation of the knowledge that we'd secured the 3 points. I mean, it was just, you know, for Bell, you know, that really encapsulated what, you know, Bellerin's all about. I mean, he's so quick, so energetic, and to have that in the 94th minute of a game where he's been up against Douglas Costa or...
Oh, to be young again.
Well, indeed. And, I mean, he had whoever it was the left back, and, you know, a good several yards on Bellerin when that chase first began. And, I mean, he was so quick to really has that quickness of thought to look up and pick out Ozil, and, you know, he single-handedly made that goal from the interception to the cross, and, you know, Ozil almost contrived to actually to not score, because he could really have just sort of buried it in the corner and not given Neuer a chance. But I mean, ultimately we scored at 2-0, and what a fantastic moment for Mesut. I mean, you know, as Paul talked about, there's an added impetus to this game for him and Per, and so to score the ceiling goal was phenomenal for all of us. You could hear it in the crowd, you could see it in his emotion. You know, I think he posted something on Twitter like, shouting may not be good for your voice, but it can be good for your heart. And so
Mesut doesn't knee slide for any old goal, I can tell you. I mean, he normally kind of does a little jog back and a little bit of a fist pump a smile.
His M.O. Yeah, his
M.O., which he did manage to fit in, by the way.
Of course.
Right at the end, of course.
It's gonna, you know, he's got to trademark that, like Bale tried to do with the heart symbol. Paul, as far as the second half, I mean, there was obviously the low moment, which is Ramsey popping the hamstring, and the early word was that it looked pretty bad. What did you make of Oxlade-Chamberlain's cameo covering for him? And maybe just a quick word on what you think this means for us going forward in terms of how we'll cope with it.
I think Ox did well. I think Alexis took over the duties of giving dangerous balls away in front of the back four, lightening the load for Ox this time round.
Yeah, that takes one thing off his plate. That's good. Yeah.
It does, yeah. I have a bit of sympathy for him on the shot he missed, because it was looping, it was hanging. It was just maybe a teensy wee bit behind him. You know, all these you can't miss kind of shots, as I always say, you really can miss them. So a little bit of sympathy for him on that, but he still should have buried it. I thought overall he did good. I thought he brought a lot of energy. I think he was a good addition with Giroud for hold up, but Alex to run past. I think he did some good covering. I think he stayed focused. He didn't have that many touches, even though he was actually on for 35 minutes. I think, this is his big chance now. He's had a lot of 20 minutes off the bench. He's been in a bit of a funk, but I think Here's my hope. My hope is he looks at clear water ahead of himself, knows he's going to get a whole bunch of games, and this suddenly lights a fire under him, and he really takes it to the next level. I think he's been very unlucky in some of the things we've had the opportunity to criticize him on. Not that he didn't deserve the criticism, but, you know, sometimes the shit just keeps falling your way, and I think there's been some of that. At least that's what I'm hoping. So,
yeah. It's such bad timing.
I am hopeful. Yeah. Yeah.
Only because Ramsey had just opened his account in the league. He's so full of running, and this formation and this settled first 11 had really started to obviously hit stride. But we know that winning titles and trophies is about how your squad performs, and this is going to be the first real test of that this season. James, maybe a little bit on what you thought of Oxlade-Chamberlain's contribution, and do you think it will be Oxlade-Chamberlain who just slots in, or do you think the manager will be tempted to maybe go with Giroud and Theo together or some other solution?
I thought it was a bright cameo. I think we've always seen when Alex comes on, he always poses a threat. The game is more settled, and given his high energy, his willingness to take on players, he's always exciting to watch in those spurts, for sure. The one thing we've talked a lot about is if right now he has the capacity to put in a performance over the full 90 minutes or 70-odd minutes.
In both halves of the pitch, that's really key.
Well, absolutely. And I'm still of the opinion that now as the team is growing, and that will, of course, this result will be a massive confidence boost. I think he's a player that can really shine when the rest of the team is really is sort of hitting close to top gear. I think just because of the way his confidence lies in it, if he can be a part of a team that's on a run, and he can be a part of an 11 that gets a couple of decent wins, I think that could really be what sort of clicks him into sort of gaining that momentum and really beginning to see what it's all about. Because I really do believe in his talent, and we've seen with players sometimes, you know, Bellerin needed the Dortmund away and a couple of tough games, but he, you know, he's a bit of an exception because he's pretty much taken to it like a duck to water so quickly. That being said, the interesting thing for me is I know that the rave for the listeners was to ask whether we thought, you know, Walcott, Alexis Sanchez and Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain would be an exciting front three, especially when we were discussing whether Ramsey was really suited to the right wing role. I fear a little bit for that front three. I think there's just a little too much similarity amongst the three of them. Yes,
but you lose that player that can come into midfield and create those triangles in that possession game. What Ramsey would do is he would actually join up with Cazorla and Ozil, because we know that Coughlin, for all the things he does well, is not going to be part of that sort of possession passing game. Now, you know, that's not really Oxlade-Chamberlain's game. He's more naturally going to stay wide and dribble and run at people. And do you have too much similarity with Alex on one side and Alexis on the other, who both kind of want to do the same thing?
Exactly. I mean, Ramsey loves to sort of drift and find spaces. Paul often sort of creates the analogy with that of Thomas Muller. He's, you know, the way in which he defends, the way he likes to come and pick up the ball deep centrally as well. He's got that kind of free role. Alex is not necessarily a traditional winger, but he likes to play a more sort of natural right wing forward role. I'm not sure if the three of them it sounds great for, like, FIFA purposes. You know, that's great.
That's such a good point.
Like, if we want to play FIFA, that's the lineup I'm probably going
with.
That's
what I use in FIFA. Such a good point.
But I don't know. So, you know, with Giroud growing in form, I wonder if Arsene may now consider Giroud through the middle with Alex, or maybe Theo on the right and Alexi. So I don't know if that. Arsene clearly likes Alex a lot, and I think he'll definitely play him out on the right. And I wonder if that actually gives Giroud a path into maybe getting back into that starting role in order to create somewhat more balance from the front three. But it's a tough one to go. I really liked the way this 11 was shaping up.
We knew that injuries would hit, and that how we cope with them is as much a part of the season as being great with your settled first 11, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, I do think that it's going to be really a challenge for Oxlade-Chamberlain. But on the one hand, look at how well it's fallen for him. I mean, Wilshire, Welbeck, Ramsey, all players who arguably be in line for that position ahead of him, all out for an extended period. It gives him a nice, clean, clear path to playing a lot. And if there's a player who has the talent to make a leap in our squad, it's Oxlade-Chamberlain. There may not be another player in our squad who is underachieving his potential right now more than Oxlade-Chamberlain, in the sense of what he has the ability to be versus what he's produced so far. And if this run of games gives him the space to achieve more of his potential, then it could be a blessing in disguise, because he has so much of it. And obviously, it'd be a huge blessing for James's bank account, because it will help the bet he has with me about Oxlade-Chamberlain starts.
Well, indeed.
Let's wrap up on the game and get to what it means. I think it's such a huge win. It is so wonderful. It feels great to get these big wins. These are the ones you look back on at the end of the season and celebrate. But, and there's always got to be a but with me, I'm sitting on it presently. It's a game we won while we're sitting bottom of a group where we should be talking about this giving us a path to topping the group. So, Paul, I'll give you two quick questions to answer. One, is there any part of this that's dulled for you at all by our position in the group going into it? Does it make it more frustrating for you what happened in the first two games? And two, give me your scenario on what you think will happen the rest of the way in the group.
Just the way I tend to look at these things, I'm not saying this is right. I kind of give up what's already happened. This game would not have gone the way it did had the previous results been different. I'm not saying we wouldn't have won. I'm not saying we shouldn't have won. I'm not saying there's a lot of things I'm not saying. I'm just saying it wouldn't have gone down like this. Last night was one of those special nights. You don't look a gift horse in the mouth. That's probably the wrong expression. You don't look a horse with two legs in the mouth, I guess, because it's not a...
I think you need to move on.
Yeah, you're right. But last night was a gift horse, and it was just a special, special night. And if we'd taken a different route to getting here with the first two games, you know, if I could wave a magic wand, I'd take different results in those first two games. I can't. I'm not going to worry about it. It is what it is. Last night was a special night, and it wouldn't have been like that had different events conspired.
Here's the best way I can put that, James. Paul, is I recorded that game, and this summer when there's no Arsenal to watch, that'll be one of the recordings I'll bring up and watch again. You know what I mean? And I won't watch it thinking, oh, this was the game where we were bottom of the group. I'll just love watching it. You know what I mean? So, all right, I get that. It didn't dull the enjoyment for you at all, which is great. It means you're a happy, healthy person. But aside from being a happy, healthy person, what do you see transpiring for the rest of the group?
I don't really know. I think when we last talked, I said I thought we'd a reasonable shot at this. I think I said our odds were 1 in 3, equal with the other boys. Now I'd say it's 50-50 with us and Olympiacos. You know, that's as good as you can say at this point. We've a lot of work to do. We could do with a result at the Allianz Arena, and we need to win those two other games. So it'll be a look at it another way. When you, I mean, we follow football for the fashion, for the fashion, for the passion and the excitement.
I know I do.
Yeah, I know I do. For the shirts, it's the shirts. No, but you know, we out of all of this drama, we got this game. We're going to have another crunch match at the Allianz, and those could have been much lamer matches. I mean, they always would have been exciting, but not this exciting. And then we're going to have that final Olympiacos game, which should have been kind of a dead rubber. I'm on a roll here. And is now going to be an absolute cracker. So, you know, sometimes you just take what it gives you. This could be a really exciting group stage as opposed to waiting to get knocked out in the round of 64, 32, 16, 8, whatever.
I think your mouth is still stuck in that two-footed horse. Two-legged horse you're talking about. James, same question for you. Any regret or feeling at full time affected or impacted by our standing in the group and what had come before, and what do you think happens the rest of the way in the group?
No, I mean, all that regret was felt following the first and second game. I think those defeats probably added even more excitement to this game and added even more like impact and emotion to the victory just because of how necessary it was against such a big side. So there was just that added amount of pressure, which I think added to the euphoria as a whole. With regards to the group, I don't know. I don't know if it's irrational or illogic and, or illogical. And I think, I mean, I wasn't on the last Champions League podcast, but I don't know. I've kind of felt as though I haven't really thought it out fully in my head. I just think we're going to go through. I just feel like it's something we kind of do. I guess if I were to play it out in my head, I would still put money on us beating Dynamo and Olympiacos, given that we're going to have to. And who knows? Maybe we get a point at the Allianz. I don't. But you know, even if we don't, we can go to Olympiacos, and I think, assuming they beat Dynamo again and win by two. You look back to the Invincibles team, for example, and I think they had 1 point after three games. And then beat Inter Milan 5-1, and they still did it. And I just think there's something about this team that that will get us out of this group stage. And maybe that's just absolute bloody madness. But
I don't think
our chances are.
So I would say this. My answer to that question is two things. None of my euphoria for the win was impacted by what had happened in the group or happened before. I have to admit, about an hour later, I thought about it, and I was like, gosh, you know what? We could be talking about top in this group right now instead of can we get out of it. That's such a shame. I think it didn't numb or dull any of my excitement or joy over the win. It may have slightly increased my frustration at the bullets we put in our foot in the first two games because they were such self-inflicted wounds and they were so unnecessary. And now that we see we can beat a Bayern Munich, we certainly should obviously be beating an Olympiacos. I think for the rest of the group, it goes like this. I don't think we will get anything from our trip to Munich. I don't rule it out, of course. I think we will give them a very stern test and could get something, but I don't think we will. I think Olympiacos will comfortably handle Zagreb in Greece. I think Olympiacos will get thumped in Munich. What Zagreb does against Munich at that point will no longer matter. And I think we will beat Zagreb at the Emirates, leading to a situation where we go to Greece needing a two-goal win to qualify from the group, which, as you know, sets us up for the one-goal win and hashtag glorious failure. I hope it doesn't go that way. But if we go to Greece needing a two-goal win, it will certainly set up for a very interesting Monaco-like occasion. The dream scenario, of course, is that Zagreb gets something from Olympiacos in Greece. I don't really see it. I think they are the poorest in the group. Or we get something in Munich. If we can get a point in Munich, then whatever happens, a win in Greece should be enough to see us go through, provided we do the business against Zagreb at home, which we will. So it's going to come down to the last game of the group in Greece and either needing to win or needing to win by multiple goals. Do we have the quality to do that? You bet we do. So let's just cross our fingers. Maybe we can get something in Munich and make our life easier. I will certainly say the Europa League is not something we want to be a part of, given how well we're doing in the league and the feeling that maybe we could do something in the league. And so I would kind of like us to go through now. I will be the first to admit that I said we had absolutely zero chance of going through from this group, that we are out, period, out. I predicated that on the fact that if we couldn't beat Olympiacos and Zagreb, we sure as heck weren't going to beat Munich, and we did. And so that's fantastic. And look, it still may come down to needing a two-goal win in Greece. So I'm not going to go patting us on the back just yet, but at least there's hope. And to dare is to hope is to do, or some stupid saying written on some shitty stadium somewhere. Anyway, that should wrap it up. We've hit just around the hour mark, which for us is practically brisk. As always, it's a pleasure talking to these two fine, optimistic gentlemen. I even tried to stay upbeat, so I hope everybody can hear how upbeat I am. My name is Elliot Smith. You can block me on Twitter at Yankee Gunner, and the two fine gentlemen who joined me today were Paul. He's on Twitter at Posnan in my pants. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, guys. That was fun and a woohoo.
Yeah, it was indeed very fun. And James is on Twitter at GoonerFanatic49. James, thank you as always.
Cheers, guys. That was thoroughly enjoyable.
Thank you. And you know what? We've got Everton at the weekend. We will be coming back with another podcast after Everton at the weekend. And I tell you something, I like our chances in that match, too. Let's keep the good times rolling. Until then, watch the game on repeat. Listen to all the podcasts, especially this one. If you can, leave us a really nice review on iTunes. We would appreciate it. Otherwise, I hope you have a wonderful rest of the week, and we'll talk to you at the weekend. Cheers.
Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals, and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.